Hello and welcome back to Podcast from the Edge with me, Peter Bruce. I went to Italy and the UK for a month, and while it was nice to be in different interesting places, it's really so good to come home as well. For those of us with an income and a good roof over our heads, South Africa is seriously hard to beat. The rest of the world is just so expensive. My guest today has also been away, specifically to London in the UK, as part of a high-level government delegation sent there by President Cyril Ramaphosa to drum up investment in South Africa and led by Deputy President Paul Mashatile. Dean McPherson is one of the senior DA members drawn into the Government of National Unity in the wake of the May 29 elections. He's now Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure and famously coined his ambition to turn South Africa into what he called a construction site while he's in office. And for the last 10 days or so, as I say, he's been in London, part of this bigger cabinet delegation, briefing institutions and hopefully actual investors on the case for putting their money into South Africa now. He's been commenting regularly on Twitter or X on his meetings. And Dean, welcome to Podcast from the Edge. I'm right in thinking, I hope, that judging by your comms during your time in London, that you return home in what might be called a positive frame of mind.
Yes, Peter, it's great to be with you. And I must say that I've done a number of trips in my lifetime in the private sector and when I was in Parliament. And this was by far the most intense trip that I've ever been on. And that intensity was down to the sheer number of people that we met, from institutional investors to bondholders to infrastructure agencies, technical advisors. It was just really, really busy. And I said to my team when we left that, you know, I showed them the pack of cards that I had accumulated over the week. There must have been around 250 people that I had met in a week. So it was a lot. And so I'm glad to be back and to continue the work of running the department.
So were you all able, because there were a lot of ministers in that delegation, were you able, do you think, to really work as a team in London? What are the main learnings you come away with, and what are they doing right there that we can copy or adapt here?
Yes, so there were a number of people from the GNU that they were on the trip, and there was Deputy Finance Minister David Masondo, myself, Minister Ramaphosa from the Presidency, Deputy Minister Whitfield from Trade and Industry, and I must say that we really got on well, but we also functioned as a unit, with a very clear message, with a lot of technical expertise that we were able to give to investors, and when I read a note to investors from an advisory firm, they made that comment that they were really impressed with the knowledge and the camaraderie that existed, and that their clients felt that it had been the most important trip in the last decade to the UK. So it by all accounts was successful and was important to achieving what our goals are. And what I learned from them, Peter, is they have a laser-like focus on infrastructure coordination, development, financing, and execution. And they are very clear on targets. They are very clear on the multiple streams of financing that are required. And infrastructure is not just as simple as building a bridge. It is hugely technical. It's hugely complex. And I was able to get better understanding on that front, but also meet a number of what I think will be key partners into helping us unlock some of the challenges that we've seen over the last few years, and also be able to put together financial packages that are investable and liked both domestically and foreign.
Yeah, thanks, man. I really have been wanting to talk to you about infrastructure for a long time because it's sort of a no-brainer, or even, you know, from a liberal perspective, you know, the role of the state should be to create a playing field on which market-based economic activity takes place. And yet, even here, where the state has wanted to build the infrastructure as well as use it as an economic player itself, nothing's happened. You know, President Cyril Ramaphosa created a whole infrastructure office in his office in his first term, and he created precisely zero infrastructure at all. How will that change?
Well, Peter, what we want to do is, I think we've looked back at what worked and didn't work in the last administration. And I think that now Minister José Enzo Ramaphosa's vehicle that he created through Infrastructure South Africa is the right approach to take. I think the wrong approach was the fragmentation and disorganization that exists within pooling infrastructure projects and resources together. So that's why I've said that I want ESA, which is the acronym for Infrastructure South Africa, to be a single point of entry for government-led infrastructure, but also at the same time be able to provide technical expertise and assistance to the private sector who want to build infrastructure projects as well. And that is entirely possible. They have done so previously. Now, we also have to have some frank discussions around how government funds infrastructure and what infrastructure it funds. So through the medium-term expenditure framework, there's 950 billion rand that is earmarked for infrastructure development. But I think that both you and I would argue that there is very limited return on investment in that. And that's just because it's being left up to municipalities, other departments, state-owned enterprises, whoever, to implement these projects. And there's mixed successes. And in local government, I would say very little successes. So we are working to focus like a laser beam on infrastructure through ESA, being able to get hold of some of that MTEF funding, putting it in the infrastructure fund, which is a fund between ESA and Treasury, and then being able to leverage private sector investment into infrastructure in South Africa. Because Peter, you know as well as I do, if there are bankable projects that offer solid and decent returns to the private sector, they will come and invest. The problem is that we just don't at the moment.
And do projects that the private sector ignore, in other words, projects that only the state finances, do they also not need a return on that investment? I mean, it's still an investment. How will the state manage? How will ESA decide what it needs private help with and what it can do on its own? Or will it, by definition, always look for private partnerships in whatever it's building? I have in mind, Dean, sorry, there's a dam. And I grew up in Mthatha, and I remember my father as a young man. Early 1960s, there was talk of building a dam on the Umzumvubu River that comes out at Port St. John's. Now, finally, it's being built all these years later. It is a completely, and it was then and is still now, in my view, a completely nonsensical project. Who will pay for that?
So Peter, I think it's a complex question with a number of answers, if I can say. So where there are projects like water, as an example, we have to recognize that that is a human right and that the state has a role to play in being able to provide water and to communities. And so they will need to fund to an extent. And so on water projects, and this is a good example, what we have done is we've said with National Treasury that there's got to be a contribution to the state, and we will use that contribution to de-risk that project. So we effectively pay the indigent portion of the infrastructure build, and then we will seek to crowd in the private sector on the tariff-related side of that project so that they are able to get a return on investment. So, I mean, that's one side of the infrastructure argument. The other one is on things like concessional ports, rail, roads, you know, there are very solid business cases to be made for investment to come in. Transmission is a good example. You know, investors are chomping at the bit to get into that, but government is just not moving quick enough.
So just come back before, I want to come back to all of this. Let's talk about your department at the moment. So your public works and infrastructure, and does that imply mainly that you're going to be responsible for looking after what already exists, i.e. the public work side, maintenance side? To what extent can you dictate the build of infrastructure as infrastructure minister, essentially? Because, as you say, the 950 billion rand is in the treasury. You have to get it out of them somehow. How does your role, just talk to me a little briefly about your role as public works and infrastructure, because there's the public works side of it, which is different, isn't there?
Yeah, the public works is very different and probably more complex than the infrastructure side, just because of the shambolic state that public buildings are in, and the undervaluation of the assets. And so, you know, we actually think that there's a real opportunity to link both of them and to be able to leverage the assets that we own that are valuable, and to create some investment funds to raise capital ourselves through our assets into the infrastructure world. And those assets that don't make sense to keep hold of, we will dispose of them, or we will distribute them out to other government departments. But we've got to start to run the public works side like a property asset management portfolio would run, and actually start generating returns for the shareholder, which is the people of this country. On the infrastructure side, Peter, I mean, you know, we obviously want to work within what the national goals are, and that is obviously to lower the risk on water, which is a problem, ensure that we have sufficient energy, ensure that there is sufficient connectivity in broadband and ICT, as well as efficiency within ports and rail. So our job is also to come up with projects, and we do that through ESA, but it's to work with other entities and other departments to say, you know, what is your contribution, or what are you looking to do? We have a very solid entity in ESA. We have some of the smartest people in infrastructure, engineering and financing. Let us take those projects on. We'll prepare, we'll package them. We will go and seek funding and capitalization for those projects. Because the big difference is, and this is the selling point, Peter, is that ESA has a trusted name within the capital markets to be able to attract funding. So while the municipality may not have a great credit rating, ESA can be able to attract funds and then build it using those MIG and MTEF grants. So that's the thinking that we're looking at the moment.
Yeah.
Without having a national planning commission in infrastructure, and this is the one thing that the UK had, and we need to have a discussion about this, you know, we also have to play within, you know, the bounds in which we find ourselves in.
Yeah. So this is getting to what confuses me. So ESA, Infrastructure South Africa, is that now under you? Do they report to you?
It was confusing when I came into office, Peter, to be honest, in that part of it is still within the presidency, but I am politically responsible for it. I have said to the president that it doesn't make sense having this sort of disorganized approach to infrastructure, that ESA's got to come fully within the envelope of our department. I've also presented what I call 8 pillars to infrastructure reform within the country. And there we talk about things like grants, we talk about various finance options, but there's got to be a single line of sight for ESA, or else you will continue to have the mixed results that we have. So you and I don't disagree on that. And, you know, if the case is to say, well, you know, we want to, you know, keep it here, there and everywhere, well, then I would sort of then need to say, maybe it's actually best placed somewhere else. Because if you want me to do a job, you need to give me the tools to do so.
Exactly. So it's interesting, because you were talking about fragmentation earlier on, and it is fragmented. Infrastructure SA, ISA, has a list of its own projects, and I've gone through the list at your suggestion some months ago. It's exhausting and exhaustive. There's a lot of stuff there. And, the levels or the processes by which a project, needs to go through in order for somebody to put R1 into it are quite exhaustive. So infrastructure, and there must have been close to 80 to 100 projects on there. Nedbank also has a list of infrastructure projects that it talks about. National Treasury is looking at, according to stories that I've read, it's looking at 40 infrastructure projects to decide which of them it will fund and which one it won't. And what I was, I think that what I would like to see is somehow the creation of a central infrastructure program that we can all follow, all South Africans can follow and get excited about, because it's all very well. I'm building a house in Stanford, but that's not going to count as part of the construction site, but it is a construction site. But, what we need to do is decide what counts and where's it happening and where can we go and look at it happening?
Mm. Peter, you're right. And actually, I have said, I don't count student accommodation as infrastructure. So I've taken that out of the portfolio.
Good.
I think that
there was a lot of it in there.
We've got to narrow down to, what is real infrastructure. And infrastructure is around, is assets and the building of those assets that move the economic dial within our country. So as I said, things around water, transmission, energy, roads, rail, port, and those are the key important infrastructure projects that we're looking at. I mean, you can't have a situation where you have, all these players in the field and nothing gets done. So I take your point. We're working hard to actually narrow that. We'll be bringing together all of the players in around March next year to actually try and come up with a single defined list that not only government is leading, but how do local financial institutions partake in that? How do international financial institutions partake in that as well? So that there is a common focus. So if you go and look at the National Infrastructure Plan 2050, I mean, my view is that even, I think that needs to be narrowed down and focused. I think it's wide sort of ideas and thoughts. Instead of actually saying what needs to be here to achieve that economic goal. It can't just be, well, we need to build X for Y. There's got to be actual real tangible outcomes. And so some of the stuff that does excite me, as an example, on some of the efficiency programs that we've developed, and we've got some strong interest now after I was in China from the AIIB, which is the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. We've been a member of this for 8 years. We've never taken a dollar from them. They are now coming out here in November after I met with them in China, and they're coming to do a country inspection. We potentially got 8 billion rand of concessional financing for efficiency projects in Cape Town and Durban. Those are the kind of projects that we're looking for that we know actually have determined outcomes.
Give me an example. What does an efficiency project look like? I mean, what do you mean?
So what we are looking at doing is putting in new gantries in Cape Town Harbour. So we know that it's the worst performing port in the world. So we have looked at how they can improve their efficiency. Of course, we do that with Transnet. We don't just come there and say, we're going to do this on our own. So we work with Transnet. And then we've put together a bankable project that offers return for obviously for shareholders, but also is placed within the space of green financing. So I didn't know this, but apparently now that if you can drive efficiencies in ports and rail, you can actually attract green financing into that. Now AIIB, as an example, And I mean, this is these are just exploratory talks. Now, they are interested in funding stuff like that because that fits within their portfolio. But we would never have found out that if we had never had those discussions. And these discussions are the first time that we've ever had with them. So just, you know, by meeting new people, by having these discussions, by advertising ESA and what we're doing, we're at least starting to bring focus and bring new people towards us.
Yeah. It's still a tough job, isn't it? I mean, it's you know, whoever finally, let's say that you get the infrastructure thing centralized around you, you still have to break through that incredible difficulty that the country has, or frankly, let me just say that the ANC has had thus far in converting the ideas into action. It's never done that in its history, really. And the decisions and the lists that you've been given of projects, as you say, mountains of ideas, everyone's got ideas. But actually converting them and doing them seems to be so hard. You know, I was just reading a note the other day that the concession to this Filipino company in Durban Harbour, that's now been delayed another 6 months. Somebody's written to the Filipinos and said, well, look, sorry, you know, we haven't finished this court case, and so the whole thing has to be redone, and we can't, you know, we please do you mind another delay for, you know, until March next year. And that's so dispiriting for people, you know, who come here and want to do business here. And we just, you know, we can't seem to get our act together. Do you feel confident enough that you can bang the table? I mean, you know, you're a young guy, you're in a minority party in the government. But what you're sitting on is the answer to almost everything in this country. And, you know, if you get it right, you're a hero. But if nothing happens, and it might not be your fault, but it might not be because of you, but it will be your responsibility because you won't have done it. What will success look like in 4 or 5 years' time?
So let me say, Peter, on that Durban Harbour Transnet transaction, the real danger with that is that you send a signal to international investors that that we cannot implement big transformative projects like that, and you actually then start to increase the cost of financing those sorts of deals. And so, you know, I think it's deeply troubling what has gone on there, and I don't think that that Transnet have been forthcoming in finding a solution. In fact, they were supposed to have signed the appointment letter in September. Now, I mean, it is not before a court. It hasn't. There's no judgment, and yet you know, even when these papers were lodged in March, they kept saying no, well, we'll have to wait for the outcome of the case. Now, I'm no lawyer, but, you know, I mean, they still could have and should have signed until there was actually a judgment, and they actually then started dragging their feet. It sends a really bad message. What does success look like, Peter? Well, I mean, I think success has to be around how many projects did we actually implement? So, you know, from very few in the sixth term to, you know, an actual number. I don't know what that number is yet. We've got to dramatically increase investment. And I'm on a massive drive to do exactly that, because our full infrastructure rollout, if you had to add up all the projects, is 4.5 trillion rand. That doesn't exist on the balance sheet. And we've only been given 1 billion rand for project preparation. So there's a massive disjuncture between what we need and what we need to do. So I know the answer exists in private capital markets. So we need to go and do that. And we need to ramp up, and I'm going to do my best, at least through the private sector, to ramp up gross fixed capital formation from 14% where it is, as close as we can get to 30. The problem that we have is that also is premised on public sector spending in infrastructure. So we're going to have to be clever, and that's why I'm looking at how do we use our public assets as a contributor and raise funds through public assets to contribute it. So it's really complex, Peter, and I don't have all the answers yet. I wasn't an expert in infrastructure 4 months ago. I'm still not. I'm getting better. But once we, I do hope by March or April next year that we will be able to provide a concise plan that people can hold us accountable to say, this is what you will be measured by in 5 years' time.
Yeah. All right. So interesting, Dean, that you're talking about, trying to get money out of the government for this. And obviously, the government is being as cautious as it can be. It set itself some tough fiscal rules. It can't be throwing money around. And as you can see, teachers are now being laid off or not being rehired, and there are all sorts of cuts available. But in the UK, the same debate has been taking place at a slightly more interesting level than it is here, because Labour's come into power, all sort of, panicking about the state of the finances. And having said that, it won't raise any taxes. It's now discovered, surprise, surprise, that there's a £22 billion hole in the country's finances, and it can't spend the money that it needs to spend. And it's so interesting because left-wing economists would always be saying, but even right-wing economists or right-to-center economists are now saying to the government, listen, it's not how much money you spend and whether you break the fiscal rule or not. It's what you spend it on, and if you're spending money, if you're investing in projects which increase your productivity as a country, it doesn't matter that it's more that it breaks the fiscal rule, because you'll be getting return on that. It will make you richer to do the spending than poorer. So do it. And I wonder whether we should be having that debate here. At the moment, our economic debate is very sort of fractured, isn't it? On the one hand, you're saying that people on the left saying spend money like it's going out of fashion. And on the other hand, people, which I might have been, too often a part, are saying we can't afford it. It's too much money. Our debt is too high. It shouldn't matter what your debt is if what you're spending the money on is going to make you more money. How do we get to have that debate here?
I think, Peter, it's an important debate, and it's about priorities. And, if our priorities are not on infrastructure-led growth or on spending money that generates a return, outside the basket of, defined and agreed social security that we should offer as a country, I think that spending should be reviewed. And I think that the one thing that South Africa has lacked for a long time is a spending review, a full spending review. And I think that the government would do well to do that, to actually see where it is getting value for money. I think that when it comes to infrastructure, there is some of the cheapest finance available is in infrastructure, actually. And so we should be trying to access as much of that as possible, particularly in climate change funding, that is incredibly concessional and incredibly cheap to access. And if we don't do that, we're going to miss out. Because my worry is this, Peter, is that we find ourselves in a unique place as a country. We find ourselves a place where, marginally growth is improving. Sentiment is on the rise, which in itself can also, drive growth, but it's not a long-term strategy. The cost of borrowing is decreasing. And if we can time this right, we can actually catch it on the upswing in infrastructure-led growth. And that's why I'm, determined to get to that point, and we're working so hard so that we don't miss that. But at the same time, government also needs to play its role, and we've got to stop spending money on things that don't add economic value. One of the greatest tragedies, I think, in the UK, and they will regret this over time, is that they didn't finish part two of HS2. And that is going to haunt them for generations.
This is the railway project, just so people,
absolutely,
people may not know.
And, yeah. And it was going to, link the north with the south. And,
you know, I must be careful because I don't want to sound like I'm reckless when it comes to spending. But, you know, there is a business case for debt into infrastructure because it does generate a return. I think we must be careful not to make the mistake that we cut our nose off to spite our face when it comes to debt consolidation, and that we are not consolidating in the right places, and we don't end up consolidating in the wrong places, and that's in infrastructure.
There is still no, even though there might be in your mind, there's no agreement in government on the sort of 10 big or 20 big projects that we might want to build. If you were to make up an infrastructure index, right? The infrastructure index would be something that you could publish once a month, which would tell the people whether infrastructure was better or worse than it was whenever the base year might have been. What would you want to put in that index? I mean, not my house, but and not student accommodation in Cape Town. But what's there? Water, for sure. Railways, for sure. Roads, absolutely. But, you know, they're probably things that are invisible to mere journalists like myself that, you know, we don't spot. I mean, what would an infrastructure index be made up of if you did one in South Africa?
So I think progress on the 14,000 kilometers of transmission line, that is worth 350 billion rand. There is no funding off the balance sheet that I'm aware of that's going to be made available. So that's going to have to be, you know, virtually 100% funded, from the private sector. And that's something we've got to measure. And it's hugely important because we can generate all the electricity we want. If we can't move it around the country, you know, we're not going to get anywhere. I think on ports and railways, that is just a key important one for us. And we're working hard with Transnet to help them to do that, because we've got to get goods off of the roads and back onto railways. And there's pots and pots of money available for that. And then, Peter, I think we've got to keep our eye on water. My team, you know, often preempt me when they say, let me guess, you want to talk about water again? I said, absolutely. Because if we aren't building water capacity, we're going to face the same crisis we did in Eskom. And it's a lot harder to build water infrastructure than it is electricity, by the way. It takes a lot longer. And I think, lastly, what I would say, Peter, is you know, I come from local government. That's where I started out. And unless we can fix infrastructure in local government, you know, everything else is just hypothetical, because you've got to get bulk infrastructure in local government, particularly in metros, right, or else you're not going to be able to build something on top of that. Now, I mean, I would say, and not just because, you know, it's run by, you know, a very good mayor, but Cape Town has got it right in terms of its infrastructure build and financing, because they are trusted to be able to deliver on time and on budget. And so they're able to access concessional loans from the World Bank, from other multilateral banks, DFIs, etc. No other municipality is able to do that. So what we're saying is, we're not going to take away the funding through the municipal infrastructure grant. Let's put it into the infrastructure fund. Let us leverage it four or five times that we've been able to do in other projects with the private sector, so we can actually build more for less in local government. We will then hand over that project with a maintenance plan, because that's the other critical discussion, is how do you maintain infrastructure, which we don't have a good track record of in South Africa. And then that then is an economic driver in the municipality. So, I mean, I think that that's how we need to track infrastructure and what we should be measuring progress against.
And just coming to the end, you know, the I wrote it at the beginning of this discussion, worrying about the enthusiasm, your enthusiasm coming into office, worrying about it sort of slowly fading because nothing happens. It's the ANC, and I don't really mean to turn this into a party thing, but it's the major party in government. It's terribly slow, and it always has been. There's a hope, I'm sure, amongst in the markets and amongst investors that the presence of the DA and other parties in the government of national unity might speed it up a little bit, but there's no sign of that actually happening yet. This slowness creeping out all over the place, and I'm asking you the same question over and over again, but I'll finish with it again. I mean, what can you do other than to say what you've told me? So, what can the DA do in the GNU to make spending happen? How do you force things ahead? Because, you know, once you've got a project in mind, then there's a whole different discussion about, you know, what money goes in. There's a BEE discussion got to happen, and there's all sorts of nonsense to the got nothing to do with the infrastructure itself, nothing to do with the productivity or the return, but it's all politics that holds us back. And the politics in terms of have got nothing really to do with growth or the creation of wealth, well, not in a national sense. I mean, you face obstacles in South Africa that you wouldn't normally face in competing countries.
So let me say this, Peter. I mean, I think that there is a speed that has come into government, and I think that you've got to look for it. And it is, you know, we sometimes get overwhelmed by the slowness of government. But I think if you look at what Leon Schreiber has done, you know, in Home Affairs, things are happening. I think if you look at what the police minister is doing, you know, he's now saying we're going to work with private securities after years of animosity. Yeah, I think that there are real examples of a speed to solve problems that has entered in. On my side, you know, we are about to issue the first round of request for proposals on properties that we don't want anymore. I mean, and we're going to say to the market, what do you want to do with them? I mean, that's quite remarkable for 3 months, you know, to take place. And I think that we've got to remember, Peter, that it's only been 3 months, and you will know that infrastructure doesn't get built, you know, overnight. So it is going to take time. But I'm determined and to make it happen. Because, you know, if it doesn't happen, you know, that's on me. And, you know, maybe the president in his wisdom said, let me give it to someone, you know, who sat on the opposition benches for 10 years and said, I'll show you how it's done. And now he said, well, you better go and do it. So, you know, I'm going to do the best that I can. And I want to present a plan that is credible. But, you know, also you have to use a bit of force. And I'm not going to take no, and I'm not going to take, you know, government, speak as an answer for everything. So if I have to push my way through some doors, you know, so be it. But because I know that time is running out, I want to take advantage of the upswing that I think that we find ourselves in. And I want to get those projects in the ground. So that also, let's be fair, that the DA has something to show for it at the end of the day, and that we actually, you know, we have something then to campaign on in 2029.
Yeah. Dean McPherson, I can't thank you enough for joining me here and being so forthright. You've got a tough job ahead of you, and that's without all the attendant politics. So best of luck, and thank you for listening in. I'll be back next week with another podcast from The Edge. Take care, and bye-bye.